Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Bob Breeze, the Department of Energy's Chief Information Officer. Now, Bob, in many ways, this is a return trip for you on Ask the CIO. So let's start with the welcome back.
Thanks. It's good to be back. It's good to spend some time with you, Jason.
We got a lot to talk about. You're a busy man. So it's been about 18 months since you were last on the show. So I want to start with an update on some previous priorities. At the Energy Department, at the time, you talked about modernizing your IT infrastructure, something you called different layers, cloud, security, mobility. Let's start with the mobility layer, and then we're going to work through some of the other ones, and including a recent blog post you did around this infrastructure effort. So let's start with the mobility layer of the IT infrastructure modernization effort.
I think we're making really good progress there, and it's all part of, you know, our broader strategy to transform, protect, and advance DOE's IT ecosystem, but mobility is a huge part of that. And I think we've made a lot of progress on some cases on the financial savings side. We've done a lot of consolidation of our mobile contracts, and we've brought in some help to provision those mobile devices in a way that we can look at usage, we can pool minutes, and we're really seeing a lot of reductions, hundreds of thousands of dollars of savings in that area. The other is on a policy side, as we see more and more smartphones and other types of devices, whether they be Android, iOS, Windows Mobile, we're seeing that we really got to be able to integrate those into our environment. And so we've been working very hard on a mobile device management, mobile application management, and mobile security management solution. We now have a department policy that is almost completely approved, and that will lay out some of the high-level expectations of our mobile infrastructure. Probably not as detailed as you might see from like a Department of Defense, but we think that it will provide a consistent policy that we can appropriately tailor for our program offices, because clearly we don't want to have too little security in the National Nuclear Security Administration, or in some cases too much security in our open science program. So mobility, big part of where we're going. I think we've made great progress in reducing costs, improving security, improving our ability to put these smart devices into place. And I think later this summer we'll be able to tie a bow on that and really showcase a nearly finished product.
So until this policy is out, is there a relative hold on mobility, or you're rolling out in pilots, and then once this policy comes out, you can really go full bore?
We're still moving ahead. The policy's been a little bit fragmented, and that's just the nature of a large dispersed organization. The national laboratories, production plants, our program offices have all issued policy that they believe is consistent with our IT management and IT security policies writ large. But what this will do is bring the best of all of those initiatives together into a more coherent whole. So as people move from program office to program office, they won't have to say, oh, well, I've got to change the way my mobile device is managed. I think we're going to be a lot more coherent in our approach forward. So not slowing us down at all. I think it's to just make it better in the future.
From a contracting perspective, I'm not sure you can answer this yet, but people hear policy, then they hear MDM. And other mobile app, is there RFPs, is there acquisitions coming for that, or is something already in place?
Well, there's something already in place. You know, our large IT service provider, or our partner here, our contract partner, is ActionNet. And, you know, so we work with them on a performance-based contract, and, you know, we give them tasks, and then they go work these things to conclusion. So there are a pretty long laundry list of partners, both those that have been around us for a while and those that are coming on board in the future. So with respect to internal to my office, I think we're working through that way. Out in the field, you'll probably eventually see more of these RFP-type things come up. But once again, we're working towards a common standards-based structure, not a product-based structure.
And I imagine part of this is that risk management approach to devices and apps. Is that going to come out with this policy, with this new set of processes?
Absolutely. And in fact, that policy is going to demonstrate that we remain aligned to this past commitment to risk management, that we've got to protect information, whether it's the endpoint, whether it's the server or the data that runs between them, based on what that particular data and information resource is, not based on the fact that it just belongs to the Department of Energy. So risk management is a big part of this, absolutely.
Because I know a lot of agencies, it's one of the key things you hear time and again is we're going to do it on a risk management approach. You hear more obviously around the cyber world, but I think the mobile world, because it's so entangled with cyber, you hear it from there too. So when you brought up all the things that are happening, I just figured that was a good one to talk about. Let's talk about some of the other layers. We talked about mobile, then there's cloud, and there's security. Let's jump into both of those.
I guess we'll start with cloud. Cloud's been a little bit of a challenge for us, mainly because of the number of initiatives and funding challenges. Our philosophy is still to move as many things as we can to X as a service, whether it's infrastructure, platform, whether it's mobile security, to move these commercial type services to the cloud. In some cases, public cloud, and some of our national laboratories are working with public cloud providers. In other cases, to a private cloud where we'll work to build that cloud infrastructure in-house. And then in some of the hybrid cases. So we're going to be in all three major types of cloud environments. And I think our approach is pretty solid. Once again, where do we put assets in a way that appropriately manages the risk? But I will tell you that as much as, you know, we try to move forward, that this funding environment that we're in is challenging, and we're having to take a really hard look at a lot of what we do so that we can follow that guidance of cut and reinvest. Where can we reduce the level of effort or eliminate IT activities and then grab those savings and put them back into our modernization and our cloud migration? Because we all know there's not more money coming down the pike, but we do know that there are things that we can do smarter in order to get that modernization moving.
And I think that's one of the frustrations that other CIOs that I've talked to talk about is they want to go to cloud or whatever the VDI. I think we'll talk about that in a second as well. But there is that upfront investment, and you got to have the money for that upfront investment. How are you guys prioritizing what goes to the cloud first and what maybe can or has to wait?
We're kind of on two tracks there. One is I really want to get more of our infrastructure as a service move to a cloud type provisioning. One is it's more flexible. It'll scale up or down as we need it to. But the second is that as we can further virtualize our environment, we'll be able to focus our security efforts much more tightly. And I think we'll be more secure. I'm confident we'll be more secure in the future. The other is on these other commodity type services like email and office productivity, things like service management. We're looking at software as a service type solutions. We're evaluating. We have people that are on Office 365 in this department. We have people that are on Google apps for government or for enterprise. We have folks that are on Workday for HR and payroll, on ServiceNow for service desk management. A lot of these things are really beginning to develop solidly in the commercial space. They're low-risk areas, and wherever we can find the opportunity to migrate, you know, in our life cycle planning, we're doing that.
Now, these are all pilots right now, correct? Versus you're not implementing multiple versions of whether it's Office 365 or Google Apps or Enterprise. You're looking at these from a piloting standpoint.
Well, I would say we've got some pretty solid foothold in the production side. It's beyond pilot. We have several laboratories that are fully transitioned over to these. And so now what we look to do is where can we consolidate agreements? Because sometimes these are negotiated separately. A science lab or an energy lab may negotiate separately because they have initially different requirements. But as we get them on board and we start sorting through them as a collection of laboratory and headquarters CIOs, we can start to find the commonalities and converge those things. So I think we're in that think big, start small, scale fast type thing. And so we've started small. We want to scale as fast as reasonably possible. But as part of that, we want to consolidate on the way, consolidate those agreements and contracts where we can, because we're pretty confident that, as we've seen in the past, this proliferation of like solutions is 3-5 years from now, we'll be saying, gee whiz, I wish we would have done this in one large contract and taken care of our buying power up front, rather than 5 years later when we're like, gee whiz, you know, that was a lost opportunity of several hundred thousand dollars or, you know, potentially millions. Is we're trying to do that as we begin to scale now.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about virtualization, and we'll jump into that final layer of security. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Bob Breeze, the Energy Department's Chief Information Officer.
As a manager, you need to know how you can make your organization more efficient. Listen for Management Friday on Federal News Radio. We bring you information on the keystone of success for any agency or business. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's perspective on inside government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Bob Breeze, the Department of Energy's Chief Information Officer. Now, Bob, before break, we were talking about the different layers of your infrastructure modernization. We had just gotten finished talking about cloud. Part of cloud, and you mentioned this a little bit, is virtualization. One of the things that we talked about 18 months ago was a priority around VDI, virtual desktop interface. You guys were just in the early stages of a VDI pilot. Talk about that pilot, what came of that effort, where is VDI now within the Department of Energy?
With respect to virtual desktop interface, or VDI, that pilot program that we started 18 months ago is in the process of transitioning to production. We've had about 500 or 600 people in pilot mode for well over a year now. I use it every day, and I absolutely love it. It is really a great enabler to us from a cost and a security perspective. So we're beginning to scale that out into production. Our goal is by the end of this year to have 2,000 users on it, and then to quickly scale up and grab the rest of our federal workforce over the course of the next probably maybe 18 months, 18 to 24 months from now. It is really closely linked to our cloud strategy, and it's pretty reliant on our ability to get to these infrastructure as a service models, because as things scale up or down during usage, we want to be able to pull that infrastructure back during times of low use and then scale it up during the workday or in times of a continuity of operations exercise, those types of things. So VDI is a great enabler. Our security team is working very closely with our IT ops team to make sure that as we wrap this thing up, that we're not endangering ourselves at a single point of failure. And again, the work with our current partner, ActionNet, with our virtualization partners, is really moving forward nicely, and I think it's going to be very successful. That said, our labs and plants are also working on similar efforts, and we're staying in very close tie with them to make sure that we're continuously learning off of each other. They're doing it at scale in their own environments, and then we'll eventually continue to tie these together in DOE federated environment.
Let's talk a little bit about that VDI setup. Now, I've heard VDI mentioned in several different regards. It's thin client or zero client, or also something like PC on a stick. Which flavor, if you will, of VDI are you guys using?
At headquarters here, we're working on the thin client approach. We'll repurpose our big boxes as we build capital to buy the thin clients, but we really like moving to the thin client devices because it gets us, I mean, it literally reduces the electrical load at the desktop on that box by about 90%. And so, you know, being the Department of Energy, we also want to make sure that we're energy conscious, and it's a big part of our energy saving strategy is to move to these thin client devices and these low power LED monitors and things like that. So great reduction in the electrical footprint as well.
And then I know we'll talk about, but in a security benefit as well, and the fact that you patch once and it goes to everybody, you don't have to worry about, well, did I do your machine and is John's machine done? That's probably another huge benefit that you're looking toward.
Oh, absolutely. You know, trying to manage tens of thousands of endpoints is quite a big deal, and being able to reduce that down to a standard set of virtual desktop images, you know, standard images is going to be a big help. That'll really free up our security operations center to spend less time on solving all these point solutions and point challenges, and being able to spend time on continuously evaluating the network at whole and looking for, you know, intrusion attempts, for odd behavior on the network and those types of things. So in addition, again, addition to energy savings, addition to cost, in addition to reducing complexity, it's really going to be an enabler to our security team.
Again, I want to go back to security in a second, but from a thin client perspective, just one last question around that. Are you able to tap into that thin client capability if you're working from home or working outside the office because you're on travel?
As long as you have an internet connection, you know, I can come in, whether it's off of a laptop or my home desktop. You know, we'd use our two-factor authentication and our HSPD-12 cards and attach into that. And the nice thing is I can leave work in place when I go home at the end of the day, and I can go home, not that my wife appreciates this, but log in, and my desk is exactly like I left it. And so all it requires is an internet connection. It's secure. We don't allow that relationship between that virtual desktop interface and the non-government equipment, so it's like a glove box or a sandbox. And so we're feeling very confident about that security situation. One downside, if you're sitting somewhere and you've got your laptop and you can't work because you don't have an internet connection, you may feel like you're not being very productive. And for folks that have heavy travel requirements, then, you know, we have the ability to partner them up with a virtual private network solution on a encrypted laptop. They can switch between VDI and VPN and keep their work going, even if they're in a disconnected environment.
And I think that's important because, as you know, especially the Department of Energy, if you're out in the field, if you're at a lab that may not have the strongest connection or for whatever reason, you still need to get work done. And so having that VPN piece is obviously very important. And that goes back to security. So let's jump into a little bit more about the Security Operations Center that you mentioned. I think at the time when we spoke about 18 months ago, the Joint Cybersecurity Coordination Center was really just getting off the ground. It was really just showing some real great benefits for the Department of Energy. Give us a status update of the center, and then give me a sense of how it fits in more broadly with some of those administration priorities, specifically around continuous diagnostics and mitigation.
The Joint Cyber Coordination Center was an idea that came out of a problem that we had back in 2011, and as a result, we consolidated a number of enterprise security activities into a single entity, that being the Joint Cyber Coordination Center, or as we call it in shorthand, JC3. The JC3 reached what we considered to be its initial operating capability in 2013, and it continues to grow and expand in its capabilities today. I think, you know, at first, some of the program offices, some of our national labs and plants were a little circumspect about what's the CIO trying to do here. Are they trying to take away our ability to manage our own networks and secure our own networks? But the JC3 is really more of a information sharing, analysis, reporting, coordination of incident response, those types of functions. And so it's really it's a collaborative environment, and it shouldn't be viewed as a traditional security operations center. Even at headquarters, my operational team runs its own SOC. It has its network ops center and its security operations center co-located, working together. And to the JC3, they look just like one of our national labs or plants, because the JC3's job is to pull in this information from the enterprise sensors, from the incidents and the issues that are being reported by all of our sites, going through those, doing comprehensive cross-site analysis, and then providing tipping and queuing, threat vectors, that type of stuff, out to our teams of men and women that are network together in their chat rooms and defending their own local networks. So it's going really well. Some of the technologies and some of the solutions that we've built here and put into place in the JC3 are actually being leveraged out in the private sector now. So as we learn things, we're working with the Department of Homeland Security to say, hey, here are best practices or lessons learned that we have. And we turn those over to Homeland Security, and then they, working with their private sector relationships, offer those things out so that the private sector can better enhance their own cybersecurity. So keeps that good, you know, that government, that public sector, private sector partnership going without creating any type of challenge where we have a private entity acting as an agent of the government. So keep that separation. But it's going really well, and I really couldn't be happier with it.
Was there any concern on your part that you would have a duplication of effort where you have this JC3, but then you also, as you mentioned, for headquarters, you have your own SOC and NOC? Is that a concern that maybe people will see that as duplication?
Well, I think that was at first, and that's why it's been 3 years since we conceptualized this to the point where I think everyone is fully comfortable with it, is there was some concern that we were either going to duplicate or try to take over local network security. And we had to work through a lot of meetings, through a lot of technical discussions. And I don't really see that as an issue anymore. And I think we can clearly show how this is an enterprise function. It's one that's not performed locally, can't be performed locally, but at the same time doesn't duplicate the efforts that are going on locally. So, and, you know, if there is a small site that needs help, that is something that the JC3 can do. They can either help align resources from a larger site to a smaller site, or could take something over, you know, say some backwatch monitoring or things like that. If folks need to send us feeds, you know, overnight while they've got something else going on, we can do that. So we can surge to cover those, but for the most part, local security is local, and enterprise security is here.
Very nice. I think that's a good explanation, and well, if there's anyone else who's not at ease, I think that definitely helps. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to jump into some new priorities. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Bob Breeze, the Department of Energy's Chief Information Officer.
So, guess what I just heard?
You mean about the Roth TSP?
Okay, yeah. Well, also...
that bid protest on the DOD contract.
Right. But did you know...
who the Senate confirmed for the administrator's job?
Well, what about...
OMB's digital strategy.
Jeez, how do you know everything that's going on in the federal government?
I know, because I signed up for Federal News Radio's email alerts.
Be in the know and know it first with Federal News Radio's email alerts. Sign up today at federalnewsradio.com. Search email alerts.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Bob Breeze, the Department of Energy's Chief Information Officer. Now, Bob, we spent the last 20 minutes of the show talking all about your old priorities, so you mixed in some new stuff in there, obviously. Let's talk about your new priorities. What do you want to hope to focus on over the next 6 or 9 months, including a recently thing that you blogged about on the CIO.gov, One NSA Network? Talk about that.
Well, the One NSA Network is still a big part of our modernization strategy. That's a partnership that was developed between my office and one of our components, that is the National Nuclear Security Administration. They have the advantage, if you want to say that, the advantage of needing to act like an enterprise. So their chief information officer and chief technology officer partnered with us to put together basically a set of initiatives around connecting their sites together in a more robust environment, providing identity management across their sites, seamless identity and access management, moving to the cloud and providing secure delivery of application services, and then also providing a collaborative environment for chat, for video, those types of things, and document sharing and editing. So we continue to work forward with that. It's going very well. We were sad to see one of our chief architects from NNSA head to the private sector, Anil Carmel, and here, you know, at the end of this month, Travis Howerton, the chief technology officer over there, will be transitioning over to become a member of the Oak Ridge National Laboratory. So the good news is that they all hung in there long enough to get this to the point where we've got it under an authority to test, and it's under its official test program right now. The plan is to turn it into production later this fiscal year, prove that it can scale, and all those things I talked about with virtual desktop interface, with security, with cloud, mobility. All of those things are linked together and supported by this test program we have with NNSA. And so that still continues. I think one of the things is that we've been a very active group in the last 18 months. And, you know, when you say, hey, wow, 18 months ago you had all these ideas, where are you going? Is we've knocked out a lot of things, and we're still working on a lot of things. And what we're doing now is we're about to deliver a new information resources management strategic plan. We came up with a lot of ideas in our IT modernization strategy, the One NNSA Network, the things we're doing with mobility. And we said, hey, you know what? We're starting to proliferate documents, and we need to drag those together and make sure we keep them focused. So we're going to stay on this transform, protect, advance mantra, and we're going to wrap that into our four strategic goals of, you know, delivering high-quality IT solutions that are mission-focused, making sure they're appropriately secure, that we manage our financial resources, and that we invest in our workforce. And I think, you know, you've opined, and a lot of others have opined about the challenges we have with workforce these days, and we're no different. But we got to plow ahead and invest in the people we have, and recruit the people that we need. So A lot of good things still coming forward.
Let me back up just for a sec on the one NSA network. Now, will this be a, not a fee for service, but a enterprise service that others can tap into around energy versus a mandated, okay, everybody on this one NSA network?
Because NNSA acts like an enterprise, they are going to mandate this underlying approach to their federal employees and to their labs and plants. But it's really that underlying infrastructure. It's not, it doesn't get into the details of the applications and the activities that are performed locally. What it really does is it ties everybody together in a much more collaborative, secure environment. And so we really think that, you know, we expect this to scale well. And the intent is that we'll be able to scale this across the department. The large number of our labs and plants, as well as our program offices, have been involved in this activity, staying in touch with it. So when we're ready to scale it, I think everybody will be ready to move on to that. But they'll still be able to run their own platforms and their own applications on top of it. So it won't reduce the level of autonomy they need to be successful in their mission. What it will do is ease the burden of managing or overseeing some of the underlying connectivity and collaboration infrastructure.
In many ways, what you're providing them is an electrical grid. I'll make the playoff of the Department of Energy, that we all can plug into. And if I have a mixer and you have a TV, that doesn't matter. It's the fact is we all are using the same 110 AC-DC volt. You're losing me on electricity right now. But that, you get my point, right?
Yep, perfect. Yep, we're the underlying infrastructure, and we provide you an outlet to plug your application into.
Okay, a lot to look forward to. And I think we could talk a lot longer, but unfortunately, we are out of time for this interview. But our audience can continue the conversation online. Join us May 13th at 1 p.m. for an online chat with our guest today, Energy Department Chief Information Officer Bob Breeze. You can find more information on federalnewsradio.com, where we will also hold the online chat. So Bob, we'll look forward to that conversation too. We're done here for today with this conversation. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today was Bob Breeze, the Energy Department's Chief Information Officer. Bob, thanks for your time today, and I look forward to our online chat on May 13th.
Thanks, Jason. Look forward to the 13th. Ought to be a great time.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Discover what it takes to become a pilot at the National Air and Space Museum Stephen F. Udvar-Hazy Center in Chantilly, Virginia. Join them for the 10th annual Become a Pilot Family Day and Aviation Display. See dozens of visiting aircraft on display for one day only. Enjoy hands-on activities, story times, and kite flying demonstrations. Saturday, June 14th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., sponsored by Booz Allen Hamilton. WTOP is a proud media sponsor. Visit airandspace.si.edu for details.